You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
A few words to set context for our reading today. The book of Esther is written at a time when there were Jews living in the land of Persia, by all accounts, quite peacefully. In our story, Esther and her uncle Mordecai are members of that community. The king of Persia disposes of Queen Vashti and needs to identify a young, beautiful woman to take her place. When Mordecai hears that couriers of the king are going out in the community to identify a group of young women who might be considered for this role, he encourages his niece Esther to put herself out there because she is, by all accounts, quite beautiful. And indeed, she becomes one of the women who is taken to the court and is pampered and prepared to be considered by the king. No surprise that she is the one who is chosen to be the new queen. Now, while all that is going on, Haman becomes elevated to being the right-hand person of the king. And he's rather full of himself. And so he wants everyone to bow down, to shake with fear in his presence. Everyone does that, according to our story. Except Mordecai. Mordecai will only bow down before God. And because of this, Haman becomes so incensed that he craftily gets the king to sign an edict that all Jews in the community, in the kingdom, will be killed on a particular day. When Mordecai learns of this, he is obviously quite distraught. And so he sends a message to his niece Esther, who, according to the story, is living in comfort in the palace and has learned the rules of the palace, not the least of which being that she never approaches the king, that he always needs to call for her and invite her into his presence. And now here our reading.
Our words of wisdom are from Esther chapter 4, verses 5 through 14. Then Esther called for Hatak, one of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. Hatak went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city, in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued for Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her and command her to go to the king to beg his favor and plead with him on behalf of her people. And Hatak went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther spoke to Hatak and commanded him to go to Mordecai and say,
"All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law, to be put to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter so that he may live. But as for me, I have not been called to come into the king these 30 days."
When they told Mordecai what Esther had said, Mordecai told them to reply to Esther,
"Do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter. But you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
I wonder if people in every time in history have thought that they have lived in a particularly chaotic, violent, broken world. It's no surprise that we might think that way today, given that the increase in violence, both verbal and physical violence, the threats that are thrown out with seemingly great ease, ongoing poverty in the world, distrust, polarization. It's understandable why we might think that we live in a world that is fractured, that is broken. Within the Christian tradition, the story that we tell to help us understand how this all came to be is the story of the fall of humanity. It is found in the second chapter of Genesis, and likely many of you know it well. It is when Eve is tempted by the snake in the garden to pluck the apple from a tree that God said not to eat from, and she offers it to Adam, who eats it. Thus, human beings, right from the beginning, disobey God, and as a result, violence, dishonesty, distrust, alienation are introduced into the world. Historically, this has been a helpful story for us to use, but it has also been deeply misused over the years as well. And so I would like to share a different story that might be helpful to us, not only in helping us to understand how things came to be the way they are, but also what our role might be in bringing about some healing or wholeness in the world. This story comes out of the Jewish mystical tradition, and it goes something like this, that when God was creating the world, he wanted to continue to be part of the world, and so he sent out rays of his light, his holiness, to be part of creation. But that light was so powerful that it literally broke all the vessels that were meant to hold it. And so this great shining light ends up like shards of light dispersed throughout creation. Our role as partners with God in ongoing creation is to go about liberating those shards of light, gathering them up so that the holiness, the wholeness of the world might be experienced. I can't but help think about Esther, who, when she is living in the palace and enjoying the comforts of royal life, she's learned the ins and outs of how things go. And from what we know of the story, is willing to go along with the way things are supposed to be there. She has her comfort called up into question. While she's living in comfort, she learns from her uncle Mordecai that the Jewish community, their very lives are at stake, that they are to all be killed. And he calls on her to use her position, to use her placement with the king to protect her people. And she does. She devises a way to approach the king in a way that is not without some threat to her well-being, but certainly will allow her to bring a request to the king to undo the edict. As a result of her bravery, of her taking action, simply using the place where she found herself the relationships within which she was. There came the celebration of Purim, the annual holiday where Jews retell the entire story of Esther and how her actions saved the Jewish people. I can't help but think about Jesus. Jesus used his position to lift up, to literally to see, to respond to the need of people around him. He saw the hungry. He saw the outcast, those who needed to be healed. He spoke truth to power, calling for limits on what was given to the Caesar and for those things to be given to God. Jesus simply used where he was every day and used the gifts that he had been given for the benefit of others so that there might be healing, there might be wholeness in the world in a way that was not experienced at that time. I can't help but think of Sister Lika, who is the administrator of a shelter on the Sonora side of Nogales, and who sees over this shelter called Casa de la Misericordia. This shelter holds, literally, surrounds 120 people, mostly women and children, some men who've accompanied girlfriends and wives. They have grabbed up their children around them when there have been violence and threats of violence, threats to life, and have gathered them up, have walked from South America, from Central America to the border. They are living in this shelter where not only their needs for food and shelter are being met, but where attorneys work with them so that they might make their claims for asylum in this country. This is a fabulous community where people who have been confronted with all kinds of threats, who have lost members of their family, live together to support the life of this community. And so even they all together are helping to repair the world out of which they came. I believe that everyone who contributes to the food and the pampers and the shelter itself and to the legal processes, that we all are contributing to the repair, the healing of the world. I've had the good fortune of being with these young girls and their moms as they were making bread, and they were willing to gracefully help me learn how to make bread in a way that I never had before. They welcomed me, the stranger, even as I brought things for them who can no longer be claimed as strangers. And in that way, people who otherwise have had no history together are now community together. It ought not be any surprise, I suppose, that we live in a world that is broken, that is violent, that is distrustful. It may break our hearts that this is the case, but it would appear that in one form or another, when we humans get together over history, in some form or another, this brokenness takes shape. Our story out of the Jewish mystical tradition is fabulous in that it shows us a way of understanding this and invites us now to follow in the tradition of all of those who have and who are even now contributing to the healing and the repair of the world. My friends, every time that you use whatever gifts you may have, whatever skills you've been bestowed with, whatever expertise you have gained, whatever resources you have. Anytime you use that to approach a stranger, to heal a brokenness, to speak truth to power, to bring peace where there is violence, even when it may feel scary to do so, every time you take a step in that direction, no matter how small it may seem to you, you are contributing to releasing these shards of light into the world so that wholeness and holiness might be experienced. I'm hoping, in the days, even years ahead, that you and I together can find new ways or lift up things that you are already doing, so that we might continue to partner with God in the ongoing creation of a world that is good.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.